Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001. Advice for Patriots.
Hello. Today, let's talk about some of the things that have changed in America since September 11th. I'm not thinking about all of the new rigmarole at airports, or about how Mr. Bush's campaign of cruise missile diplomacy in the Middle East is going, or even about how opening the mail each morning in media offices around the country and in politicians' offices in Washington has become a much more exciting operation than it used to be when Ted Kaczynski was the only person putting dangerous things into letters. I'm more interested in the changes in the politically correct party line laid down for the lemmings by the media. I'm interested in changes in the way Americans view the world. And I'm interested in the changed prospects for the future of America. The most interesting thing about the new party line is its stupidity. The Jews were caught by surprise last month, and they had to whip up something in a hurry in order to deflect blame from Israel and from the U.S. government's support for Israel. Apparently, the best they could do on a moment's notice is the explanation that Osama bin Laden attacked us simply because he hates our freedom and democracy. Since they first cooked up that explanation, they've refined it quite a bit. Both the Foreign Ministry in Israel and the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, Israel's enormously powerful lobby in Washington, have been circulating talking papers to their own people, to politicians, and to everyone else who is likely to be making a public statement about America's new war or about Washington's past policy in the Middle East. These talking papers tell people how to counter what the Jews call Osama bin Laden's lies, and also how to respond to anyone who suggests that our government's support of Israel might have had something to do with the September 11th attack. The papers warn people never to raise this subject, but if someone else insists on talking about it, it is to be countered with the explanation that support for Israel had nothing at all to do with the attack, that we would have been attacked even if we weren't supporting Israel, and that the only reason for the attack is Osama bin Laden's irrational hatred of America's freedom and democracy. I believe that it's clear that many people actually believe this nonsense, judging by the number of cars with red, white, and blue ribbons tied to their antennas. But these are the people who believe everything Tom Brokaw or their beloved big brother in the White House tells them. If George Bush came on TV and told them with that mock solemn expression of his that a Martian invasion force had just landed, that the Martians were demanding 1 million sacrificial virgins as their price for not destroying Hollywood and Washington, and that U.S. Army troops would be going door to door to collect virgins, the folks with the ribbons on their antennas would believe it, and they would prepare to hand over any virgins in their households. They would consider it their patriotic duty. The party line may change from time to time, but lemmings never change. Well, the lemmings may believe that U.S. support for Israel had nothing to do with the September 11th attack or with the anthrax-laden letters now going around. But no one else believes it. Last week, the media bosses were kicking themselves because they had let the text of a statement Osama bin Laden had made be published in the United States. They had said that they had made a mistake in putting the statement before the American public. They wouldn't publish any further Osama bin Laden statements, they said, because the statements might contain secret instructions for his operatives. Everyone I've spoken with laughed at that excuse. In his last statement, Osama bin Laden said that Americans would not be secure and would have no peace of mind as long as Palestinians were not secure in their own land. That's the sort of powerful and simple message that even Sally Soccer Mom and Joe Sixpack might understand. And that's what the Jewish media bosses don't want the public to hear. They're not worried about secret instructions. They're worried about the livings figuring out what's going on. Actually, I think there's very little danger of that. And really, the changes I'm more interested in are the outlook of the minority of the population able to think for itself. The minority that doesn't believe whatever Tom Brokaw says. You know, I've been talking to this minority for years, decades actually, warning them about the consequences of letting their government get out of control, warning them of the consequences of permitting the Jews of Hollywood and New York to run our country through their control of our mass media, warning them of the consequences of continuing to sit on their hands and keep their mouths shut from fear of being denounced by the media as anti-Semites or racists. And I wasn't having as much success as I wanted at getting them to pay attention and change their ways. Many of those who listened wouldn't do anything because what I was warning them about didn't seem quite real, despite all the changes they could see around them. The deterioration of our cities and our schools, the darkening of the racial complexion of America, the trashing of our culture by the mass media, the increasingly obvious efforts of the Jewish media bosses to persuade our young women that they should bend down with non-whites. Despite everything, they themselves managed to remain comfortable and economically secure. So the things I was warning them about didn't seem quite real. They had convinced themselves that they were above it all, that they could continue to watch the destruction of their country and their people all around them, and it would never affect them personally, that they could remain secure and comfortable while everything around them went to hell. Osama bin Laden jolted some of them awake on September 11th. Some of those whose attention I hadn't been able to catch with my own warnings. He convinced some of them that what they had been observing going on around them for years was in fact real. That continuing to ignore the degenerative processes promoted by the media and the government and hoping for the best really wasn't a good strategy for personal survival. In particular, he convinced many members of the thinking minority that losing control of our government really is a serious matter, that permitting our government to be used by the Jews against their neighbors in the Middle East, and also against the genuine interest of the American people, could have real consequences at home. I have the feeling that many of these thinking people are paying at least a little more attention now to the things we've been talking about here every week. The fact that the number of people who download these broadcasts from my website each Saturday has nearly doubled since September 11th is a pretty good indication of this, I believe. Just as I'm getting more hate mail from the red, white, and blue ribbon types, I'm also getting more thoughtful responses from the people who understand and care. Which is to say, I think I have an audience now that not only is bigger, but also is more attentive and responsive. That is really important. I'm not discouraged by the fact that the attentive and responsive people still constitute only a minority of a minority. I'm encouraged by the fact that the attentive people now make up a larger minority of the thinking portion of the population than they did before September 11th. Important things always are done by minorities. Majorities don't make decisions. Individuals do. Small minorities do. History is made by active minorities. Sometimes an active minority may use the passive majority as a tool or a weapon, but the minority always acts in accord with its own will. What's important is which minority is making the decisions, which minority is active at any particular moment. For at least the past 60 years, it's been the wrong minority, an alien minority that is implacably hostile to our people. If we are to survive, that must change. Our minority must become active instead. Our minority must grow to include more of the thinking portion of our population. And that is happening now. That's been happening since September 11th. The people who understand and care have been forced to begin paying attention. I have a very strong premonition that there will be other things in the reasonably near future that will make them pay even closer attention. The Bush government, just like the Clinton government before it, thinks that it can stop terrorism with cruise missiles and smart bombs. But just think for a moment. Whether Osama bin Laden survives the Bush government's current war against Israel's enemies in the Middle East or not, he already has become immortal. In the eyes of Muslims, he has been elevated to a status in heaven alongside Mohammed. His name will be praised, and stories will be told about him around campfires throughout the Muslim world for countless generations to come, long after the Bush government has gone and been forgotten. Cruise missiles can't take Osama bin Laden's immortality away from him. There's nothing the Bush government can do to diminish his glory in the Muslim world. In fact, the more cruise missiles and smart bombs the United States unleashes on the Muslim world, the higher will Osama bin Laden's esteem rise. The more will his strike against the United States seem justified to his fellow Muslims. Don't be fooled by the tame house Muslims the media bosses have been trotting out to explain to the lemmings that violence is abhorrent to real Muslims. The real Muslims are the ones rioting against the government in Pakistan now. The real Muslims are the ones singing Osama bin Laden's praises now. And there will be no shortage of other young Muslims lusting for a share in his glory, lusting to have their praises sung around campfires too. Cruise missiles don't frighten them. There are enough of them already in this country to keep things jumping, thanks to the government's insane immigration policy of recent decades. The anthrax-laced letters that had been going around all were mailed from inside this country. And anthrax is by no means the nastiest thing that can be mailed in an envelope. The media won't even mention the biological warfare agents the government is really afraid of because they don't want to give anyone ideas. The fact is, terrorism has been made much more fashionable since September 11th, and the stakes have been raised. Simple truck bombs won't get much respect in the future, but I have a suspicion that we'll see a few more of them anyway. And I suspect that we'll also see people trying to outdo Osama bin Laden's September 11th televised extravaganza. The government and the media suspect the same thing, and they're frightened. That's why they're trying so desperately to stifle dissent and keep everyone pledging allegiance to the flag. At the University of California in Los Angeles, a library worker, 53-year-old Johnny Hargis, has been suspended without pay because he sent out an email letter criticizing U.S. support for Israel's aggression. The university administration explained that it has a policy against using university computers for political messages. But Hargis, who has worked at the UCLA library for 22 years, pointed out that no one who has been sending out pro-Israel and pro-war messages has been punished. There are similar situations at other universities around the country. Jews and neoconservatives post belligerent, bloodthirsty messages calling for the annihilation of all of the Jews' enemies in the Middle East, including Iraq and Iran, as well as Afghanistan. Anyone who calls instead for eliminating the cause of the September 11th attack, that is, for stopping the blind support by the U.S. government of Israel's aggression, is censured and threatened with expulsion or with being fired. There are still people around who can remember how it was in our universities during the Vietnam War. There are still people around who can remember how it was at our universities during the Vietnam War. That was when treason ruled on campuses. Students burned their draft cards and put up Viet Cong flags and posters of Ho Chi Minh in their dormitories. Jewish activists and groups such as Students for a Democratic Society organized pro-Viet Cong rallies on campuses. Professors encouraged this activity, and administrators didn't interfere, citing free speech. The switch to red, white, and blue ribbons and saluting the flag came rather suddenly last month, and a lot of thinking people understand why it came. They understand that it is when America is involved in a war to promote Jewish interests that pledging allegiance to the flag suddenly is declared fashionable. When Israel's welfare is threatened, Jews, ordinarily noted for their cynicism and irreverence, suddenly put their hands over their hearts and begin singing the Star Spangled Banner, and they glare at anyone who isn't singing loudly enough. And people who make the mistake of asking why get fired or suspended. But you know, firing people or suspending people who have dissenting opinions doesn't go down well with the independent thinkers. And I'll guarantee you, there will be a lot more dissent before this war is over. And the Jewish media won't be able to hide it all. What we are beginning to see now is a sharpening division between the Jews, their bought politicians, and the I Pledge Allegiance authoritarian types on one side and everyone else on the other side. We also saw a division along different lines during the Vietnam War, with the authoritarians and the Jews on opposite sides instead of the same side. I believe that the division this time will develop faster and become sharper. I don't know how the war itself will develop. It was clear before it began that the U.S. military machine is quite capable of flattening Afghanistan or any other third world country without suffering any significant losses to its own personnel, simply because we can hit them from a distance with a great deal of destructive power, and they don't have the means to hit back, except through what we call terrorism. It is certain that there will be more terrorism, although, of course, I cannot predict the form it will take or its magnitude. I can predict, however, that the media and the politicians will denounce it as cowardly and will act as if America has been wronged, that whatever form the next blow against America takes, and wherever it comes from, it will be declared unprovoked. And I can predict that the polls published by the media will continue to show nearly every American wildly enthusiastic about the war, even as the opposition to the war grows. One interesting thing about the opposition this time is that it is growing both among the Gentile left and among genuine patriots. During the Vietnam War, the members of the Gentile left all were on the Jewish side. Despite the current agreement between leftists and patriots on the single issue of ending support for Israel and limiting the war in the Middle East. I don't see much chance of real collaboration between these two elements. The Gentile left is still hopelessly confused on such essential issues as race and feminism and homosexuality and permissiveness. But the war is indeed driving a wedge between Jews and Gentile leftists, a deeper wedge than that driven by the development of Jewish neoconservatism after the Vietnam War. And for that, we should be thankful. There may be other hopeful developments as well. The assassination in Jerusalem this week of one of Israel's most bloodthirsty Jewish militants by the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine certainly was a welcome move. Until now, all of the assassins have been Jews, and all of the victims have been Palestinians. It's too soon to know whether or not this one act of retribution against the Israeli leadership will be followed by other successful blows. But it may be that the events of recent weeks have emboldened the Palestinians to act with more imagination and enterprise than before. Looking ahead a bit, there are several signs of hope here on our own home front. The heightened sense of reality among non-Lemmings, the lessening of their sense of detachment, the stronger realization that they cannot survive by continuing to sit on their hands and watch the Jews destroy the world around them. This is the single most important consequence of recent events. This, together with the growing alienation between Gentile leftists and Jews, leaves the Jews in a weaker position than they have been in a long time. They will crack their whips more frantically than before, trying to keep everyone in line, but the principal effect of that will be to generate even more resentment against them. Things are a little brittle now. A few dozen more anthrax cases, another truck bomb in a well-chosen location, and substantial changes could take place in a hurry. A stock market panic, martial law measures by the Bush government, and a sharpening of the debate as to how we got ourselves into this mess in the first place. As the debate sharpens, the Jews and their collaborators will pull out all the stops in an effort to stifle it. But I don't think that even a declaration of martial law can stifle it now. Too many people already smell the stink in Washington. Too many people already understand on whose hands is the blood of 6,000 innocent Americans who died last month. Too many people understand the true motivation behind the current war against Israel's enemies in the Middle East. The genie is out of the bottle now, and not even Mr. Bush's new anti-terrorism agency. What does he call it? The Office of Homeland Security? Not even this new federal agency can put it back in the bottle. It's a strange thing. In a novel I wrote more than 12 years ago, the title is Hunter, I talked about the formation of a new anti-terrorism agency separate from the FBI. And I pointed out that the principal aim of the new agency would not be to protect the public from terrorism, but to protect the government from an increasingly restless and disillusioned public, a sort of modern Praetorian Guard. I think that we'll be seeing more developments in that direction in the next few months, with the timing depending upon when the next surprise comes and its magnitude. Of course, I don't know what will happen next to shatter already jangled nerves, but it is likely that something will happen. My advice to responsible patriots now is this. Expect a surprise and remain calm when it comes, but don't wait for it to come to raise your voice. Speak out now. Don't be intimidated by the mindless yahoos waving their flags, or by the government, or by the media. if you point out calmly and in a reasoned way who is responsible for what happened to America last month, you will have more people agreeing with you than you might imagine. If you call for your fellow Americans to join you in regaining control of their government, the response will be greater than at any time in recent years. Thanks for being with me again today.